Hello and welcome to episode 116 of Linux Dev Time. I'm Joe.
I'm Omelith.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm Andy.
Good to talk to you all again. I had a weird thought recently, and I think this might be naive, but let me explain it to you. I realized that with an Office document or a spreadsheet, you can't just cat it and get any sort of sense out of it. It's all just nonsense. You need to open that document in an application to get the text or numbers out of it. And it got me thinking, why? Why is it like that? Surely you could just have plain text with some metadata that tells you where that plain text or numbers live within the document or spreadsheet, you know, what the font is, whether it's bold or underlined or whatever. And that made me think, well, that's kind of like HTML or Markdown. So why are Office document standards not like that?
So I don't know exactly about Microsoft Office or like the .docx format or whatever that is. I know that they are a zip file with a bunch of stuff inside of that zip file. And presumably, I mean, I'm guessing it's probably some kind of markdown or markup with some proprietary.
It's XML.
Is it XML? Okay.
That's what the X is for.
Oh, there we go. So a lot of those files, and I would say even outside of like Office document formats, there's a lot of them that use zip. And then inside the zip is a bunch of other stuff. So like there might be some plain text-ish data inside mixed in with some proprietary-ish data. It's really hard to say.
The ODF formats, which is what LibreOffice uses, they also have XML inside a zip file. So I think, Joe, like things are the way you want them to be.
Oh, so that's the end of that then, isn't it?
Well, so the old doc file format was like a dump of the memory state of Microsoft Word. That's why it loaded very, really quickly, because it just loaded the bytes off the disk and then stuck them in memory. And then that was everything up and running. But when ODF came along and Microsoft started getting worried that they weren't going to dominate the document format wars, they brought out their own XML format instead of adopting the one that was being, you know, created and standardized. They made their own one, but it is a zip file with XML in. Now, the XML is probably completely impenetrable, but it is there.
And I think when you're trying to take some sort of like running program and save state in some fashion down to a disk, there's all kinds of things to consider. Like Andy said, are you just dumping out the raw memory down to a disk? Are you trying to serialize in some sort of format? Or like there's just so much to consider. Are you using a single document? Are you using multiple documents? Are you going to take those multiple documents and zip them up into a document, right? There's just so many things to consider whenever you're trying to save the state of a program down to a disk.
There's also the rate of change, maybe. I don't know exactly what you'd call it, but in open standards, there's usually some discussion about how to change that standard and then give everyone time to adopt that change so the ecosystem continues working. But with like Microsoft Office, those are proprietary. The only ecosystem they care about is their own. So they can just break everything between two minor releases and not care. And then the open tooling that tries to work with the proprietary documents, they have to then reverse engineer whatever that change was and figure out how to be compliant with the new version.
Except they have published those formats as an open standard.
Oh.
It's just that no one else uses them. I'm not sure how vague it gets when it gets down to the details, but they tried to head off this criticism by publishing the standards. But yeah, I agree that they can kind of evolve it how they want. But with ODF, I have actually written programs that unzip the XML, do something with the document, and then zip it up again. And it does actually work. So you do get, it's not as convenient as piping it through sed or something like you would with a purely text document. But you do get the advantages of like being able to process them with other programs and stuff like that.
One of the interesting things to me about this question in general is like, okay, so if you take Microsoft Office or whatever out of the picture and you say some program that Kevin or Andy or Amelith wrote, and we don't have a giant ecosystem, right? Like nobody's trying to interoperate with the software that we're putting down for some reason. So do we or should we make our saved state in some sort of like an open format, i.e., you know, there's all kinds of different serialization formats like JSON or YAML or Seaborn. Like there's all kinds of stuff, right, that we could use. But should we be taking that into consideration as we're saving state? Because the point of the program is like, we're not necessarily trying to interoperate with a bunch of other people or so that other tools can read the stuff that we're writing down. But should we be thinking about that as we're writing the software so that other people, if they wanted to, could read the file formats that we're writing.
And should those file formats be text as opposed to binary?
Well, there's all kinds of trade-offs too. Like, are you trying to optimize for space savings, in which case text is probably not what you'd want? Or are you trying to optimize for, I mean, I guess it's hard to say in the abstract what it is, that, like the actual data that you're trying to save down a disk, but there's different trade-offs and whether or not you're trying to make it fast to load, like you mentioned earlier. Can you just like load the stuff off disk and it be in the structures that you need? Or do you have to load it from disk, deserialize, parse, do some other stuff to take that like textual format and put it into the format that the program can actually use to run?
My answer to you, Kevin, is like basically, yes, whenever possible, we should use a format and maybe document it or just make it plain text, and then people will be able to figure it out. And part of the reason why it's a yes is exactly what Joe said, which is that if someone uses our program and we go away and 50 years later they want their data, then if it's a text format, they can have it.
Some of the interesting things that are just kind of tangentially related to this is, you know how if you have a file, a lot of times there's the like file header that you can see what the document actually is. So if you had like a docx or something and you were to just cat out the first few bytes of that, you'll probably see, I think it's like pk, which for whatever reason stands for zip, but there's a bunch of different file headers, and I think that's actually what the file command will use to determine like what is this thing,
right? Yeah.
And there's all kinds of like really cool stuff in the file headers of the first few bytes. There's another thing called bomb sniffing. That's BOM without the destructive B at the end. And that's a byte order mark. So you can determine like which order are these UTF-8 bytes in as you're trying to, and things like grep will have to use, you know, byte order marks to determine like, okay, how should we parse these ones and zeros into like text? Because even just text is not really just text.
It's a sad state of affairs.
You know, they always say like strings are hard. And like the more you look down into it, strings are really, really hard. Turning a one and, you know, a bunch of ones and zeros into letters and then turning out that you need more than whatever it is, you know, 255 different characters to represent an alphabet or something. So then you have to start using multiple bytes. And how do you interpret those bytes? How do you order those bytes? How do you know if you need one byte or four bytes? Like there's just so many things to consider when you start talking about text. How do you know when you're at the end of the text?
When I say a plain text document, I mean it should be UTF-8. Like we've had this. This has happened. The world has gone through a very painful process of figuring out what the correct format is, and the correct format is UTF-8.
Unless you're on Windows, right? Windows, don't they use WTF-16 or UTF-16? I forget.
Not everyone uses the correct format, but the correct format is UTF-8.
I don't know. Based on our conversation, it kind of sounds like Microsoft isn't using the correct format ever.
This is true.
So I was thinking, can this be applied to other file formats and other software generally? Because as we talked about on 2.5 admins fairly recently, it is very, very difficult to make data readable in 50 years, 100 years or more because formats keep changing. But is there more that we can do as an industry and as developers to help that situation?
Well, I think like Andy said, you can use open formats or plain text where appropriate, or at least document the type of serialization format that you're using so that people can read it once your program is, you know, gone. Or at least you cannot introduce arbitrary extra steps in there, like, you know, trying to encrypt with a private key that no one else has. Or there's all kinds of things that you could do to make it harder and obfuscate it. So not doing those things is one step. But also, I think documenting the format, because even if you were to use something like, let's just say JSON, let's just say you used plain JSON file as your serialization thing, the structure of that JSON file could very well, like that could change, that could be difficult, it could be imparsable. Like there's all kinds of things that can happen even when you use an open format. So like taking the time to think about those things, taking the time to version your documents and make it as easy as possible for people to follow along. Like those are all things that I think we can do and can do to a bunch of open source projects.
Well, take YAML, for example. Do you think that in 100 years, anyone's going to know where the spaces belong?
They don't know where the spaces belong today.
Exactly.
I think there's definitely something to be said for using the most appropriate data storage thing for your application. So it starts quickly, runs quickly, shuts down quickly, all those things. But if that format is something that's not open or not easy to understand, I think there should be some sort of export format that does serialize it to some sort of JSON blob or whatever, so you can import it later on to some other tool. I think data portability is extremely important, even when your app doesn't necessarily have end user, non-technical people, even when it's something internal. The server might die. Then you need to get that data out and move it to a different server and stand your app back up again.
Hang on, didn't we solve this last time with SQLite?
So, Joe, you got me thinking about like image format. Wouldn't it be nice if you could just cat your GIMP files and do some automation on them without having to actually use GIMP for that and things like that? And I'm sure the GIMP internal file format is probably a zip file that is very standardized. And there's also other standard image formats like PNG, right? That are, they're not text, but they are like easily exchangeable and understood. But then I started thinking the absolute ideal for this is Inkscape. So Inkscape is a vector drawing package, but its internal file format, like its own file format that it uses natively, is SVG, which is XML. So it's literally plain text, and it's a standard format that a web browser can just load up SVG files saved from Inkscape, and they display correctly. And then they've just inserted some extra stuff that's Inkscape specific in the XML in a way that's allowed within SVG. So to me, that's almost a perfect solution. I can grep through my Inkscape files. I can load them up in some other program. And it's like it natively edits a standard format. I think that's totally cool.
Yes. And I love being able to mess with SVGs through completely unrelated CSS in a web page or something.
Yeah.
There's got to be a point, though, at which like that obviously doesn't optimize for like disk space or bandwidth, right?
Yeah.
So at some point there's some crossover where like if you were to take a PNG and then represent every pixel inside of a like XML format, at some point your let's say megabyte PNG turns into like a gigabyte PNG just to display a cat image. So like at some point there's a crossover.
SVG does allow embedding bitmap files. And I presume that's in there as like Base64 or something. So those will kind of blow up compared with the native format.
Even with bitmap, there are better ways to compress an image, either losslessly or even in lossy, but like not human detectable formats.
It's a really cool decision from the Inkscape developers. And it was a deliberate decision to adopt the existing open format instead of coming up with their own. So I guess maybe one way to try and follow Joe's vision would be to take a format like the GIMP format or something else and ask the question, why don't all graphics programs share the same internal format? Like you need an internal format for things like layers and stuff like that, which are not available in PNG. But maybe we could start to standardize across different applications. And then things would be more interoperable and you wouldn't get export, import, and losing out and all of that stuff.
There's a project out there. This is not text file based stuff or stuff that you can just easily grep, but there's a project out there. I think it's AES Crypt, if I'm remembering correctly, but they publish their file format and then they also publish like the extensions to that format. So it's really, it's more of the style of like bytes 1 through 3 or this and bytes, 6 through 7 or that. But it's still cool that they publish their format, they make it widely available, and then they have the forethought to publish some extensions to that. And how do you determine more extensions? Kind of like how SSL can do that. You have the different extensions that can go across the wire. So it's more of a wire format, but I wish more projects took the time to not only think about that kind of thing, but also document it well.
Yeah, in a way, things like XMPP and Matrix are like a standard sub-language or like a language and extensibility framework for exchanging messages or other instant media. And they have standard ways of extending them with non-standard stuff. And they also have like a subset of stuff that is standardized that everyone should understand. So in a way, instant messaging is a bit like defining an open standard for a file format, but it has to be open, right? Otherwise, no one's going to be able to talk to you. So it's kind of constrained.
Yeah, I think it's interesting the differences between wire formats that are meant to go across a network versus on disk. And some applications do kind of use a wire protocol like for their disk format. So there's an interesting crossover that happens in some kind of projects.
Yeah, and I guess one of the takeaways from this conversation for me is if we can use plain text formats and reduce the number of file formats to the smallest possible number, then we've got more chance of being able to still understand them in 50 years.
Or I would say, like, at a bare minimum, document the format. And
yeah,
because I'm thinking about even, you know, maybe streaming style, you know, like movies or whatever, right? So you're going to have some things that are absolutely going to optimize for either space on disk or the ability to load from disk extremely rapidly into memory and display whatever it is they want. But if you can have some sort of standard format or some sort of well-described format, then you have a better chance of when that project goes away in 50 or 100 years, someone could take those ones and zeros and do something meaningful with them.
Definitely. But I also think the trade-offs on this stuff change, right? So at one point, the idea of SVG being XML would have been laughed out of the room, right? Because you can't waste bytes. But it got to the point where we had enough disk and we had enough bandwidth as well, that it's a practical file format, even though there's a bit of waste there, and the advantages outweigh the disadvantages. So maybe one day, what I'm saying is maybe one day streaming video will be Base64 over JSON. I had an example this week of the pain of changing file formats, because my parents got me on a video call to try and figure out how they could persuade their Office 2003 to import .docx files like it always used to. So Office 2003 came out before .docx was a thing, but somehow they'd got a plugin or something that meant it was able to load up the new format. They like Office 2003 because it works the way they used to, and it just somehow spontaneously stopped working. And they were, as far as I can tell, there's no way of bringing back this functionality to them. I did point out to them that they hadn't had any security updates for 21 years.
Is this on XP?
No, this is Windows 10 or... Yeah, I think Windows 10. They still got the CDs. They installed off the CDs onto Windows 10.
Have you tried to show them LibreOffice?
I have talked to them about LibreOffice, but basically they don't want to change. Like, it's really stressful to change how you do things.
Yeah.
But I actually think if I could persuade them to look again at LibreOffice, it would be closer to Office 2003 than modern Microsoft Office. So it's probably a better bet than that.
I don't know what that says about LibreOffice, though.
It says it's good.
It says it doesn't change for no reason. The problem is they interact with other people, right? And I still think that, especially, like, you can read stuff that people sent you in LibreOffice, but if you're sending it back to them, I don't trust that it's going to come through to them looking right or working properly.
That's what export as PDF is for.
Yeah, but these are like living documents that they're working on. It's not just...
Well, that's what Google Docs is for.
Yes, I'm afraid that is what Google Docs is for.
As far as I know, there is a plugin that you can get from Microsoft, or I don't know if it's a plugin or just some software, that they must have installed at some point, and so that broke. I wonder if you could still get that and try reinstalling it, maybe.
I did try and get it, and I ended up basically on some kind of scam site downloading. It got stressful, so I thought I'm going to have to do that when I'm with them.
Yeah, I bet I've got that EXE somewhere sitting on one of my backups, because I've had to do that same thing for people, although it has been an awfully long time.
I was just thinking, like, related to this on-disk serialization format standardization, have you ever had issues with copying and pasting? So, like, you copy and paste out of a rich text document, right? What's actually sent to your clipboard might be the text plus a bunch of extra, like, markup bytes and stuff that get pasted down in.
Yeah.
Sometimes that gets stripped out by other documents, sometimes not. But, like, if we could standardize that, that would be amazing.
I just by default do Control-Shift-V now.
Yep, always.
What we should standardize is that Control-Shift-V is the default, and you have to try really hard to get that stupid broken rich text.
I don't know. I mean, I've seen people that are like, no, I want it to copy everything. I want it to copy the formatting and everything, but you're pasting into a totally different program. How's it supposed to know that?
Yeah, it does. And I copy out of a Google Doc into WordPress, and that most of the time preserves the formatting, and I actually want that.
I think there's one instance where I love programs copying all of the extra stuff. When you copy from VS Code into something like Google, maybe Google Docs, definitely LibreOffice, it copies the syntax highlighting of what I think of whatever theme you have. Oh, even. Nice. So that's really nice.
I really hate that.
But that should be Control-Shift-V. Control-V should be plain text.
I agree. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. We will never win this fight, but we are right.
It's a lot like being a Linux user, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. Well, we better get out of here then. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. But until then, I've been Joe.
I've been Omelith.
I've been Kevin.
And I've been Andy.
See you later.